Thank you. This is a very different topic from what we just heard about, but I'm happy to be talking to you about SCHIP premiums in Delaware. I'm a doctoral student in urban affairs and public policy at the University of Delaware, and my colleagues, Dr. Solano is my advisor there, and Mary Joan McDuffie is another research associate. I have no financial relationships to disclose. Background and significance. I think probably most of you know that the SCHIP program created in 1997 has been very successful in terms of decreasing the number of uninsured kids and increasing access to care. However, states are struggling to contain costs. Many states are trying to expand access, but under tight budget constraints, they're looking to cost sharing increasingly to contain costs. And by cost sharing, I'm referring to premiums, copayments, coinsurance, deductibles, all of which are allowed under SCHIP to a certain extent, which is in contrast to Medicaid, where children are generally exempt from cost sharing, although that's also changing with waivers. About half of states originally chose cost sharing for their SCHIP programs, the rationale being that cost sharing would help control utilization, thereby control costs. It would perhaps foster this notion of personal responsibility, maybe reduce stigma in the program, and then also to generate revenue and limit crowd out in their programs. As of June 2005, 31 states required either premiums or enrollment fees in their SCHIP programs, and I'm going to be focusing on this idea of premiums. Many states have either introduced premiums or raised premiums in recent years, and there have been many studies that have recently linked these increased premiums to decreases in enrollment or changes in enrollment. And importantly, this decrease in enrollment has not been offset by increases in private coverage. It has, some studies have shown some increase in private insurance, but I think it's safe to say that there are increased numbers of children that are uninsured as a result of increased premiums. So our research objectives, we were interested in concept of willingness to pay, which I'll describe in just a minute, but the describing the willingness to pay approach as it applies to premiums in the SCHIP program in Delaware, and demonstrate how this willingness to pay approach can inform policymakers as they anticipate changes in enrollment. So most of the studies that have been conducted to date, most if not all of them, are retrospective in nature in that they looked at states that increased premiums and then how those increased premiums affected enrollment. What we're interested in doing is trying to anticipate or predict changes in enrollment based on parents' willingness to pay for premiums. So what do I mean by willingness to pay? Before I answer that, can I just see a show of hands how many economists are? Oh no, I can't fake it. Okay. Well, I apologize for oversimplifying this. And I'm going to read to make sure I don't get this wrong. I'm not obviously not an economist, but willingness to pay is a measure of value or utility. It is the maximum sacrifice, in this case in dollars, that one is willing to make to obtain a specific good or service. And my understanding, what this does is it captures how much you are, how much you value something, how much you are able to pay for it, and then how much you're willing to pay given your preferences relative to other goods and services. Generally, I believe it's used as a tool for understanding aggregate preferences and for balancing sort of social efficiency questions. And we're using it in slightly different fashion here. In terms of just a little bit of background, Delaware's SCHIP program was established in 1999. It had premiums from its inception, and premium levels have not changed since it was established. There are three premium categories based on income. The lowest income group has a $10 per family per month premium, middle income group is $15 per month, and the highest income group is $25 per month. So our research questions. We're interested in what the maximum amount parents or guardians are willing to pay for SCHIP. What is the amount that parents are willing to pay above their actual payment level? And from economic terms, this is called consumer surplus. And my particular interest is what's the potential impact of the premium levels on disenrollment? And finally, what characteristics of families are potentially associated with their willingness to pay premiums? Our methods, this was part of a much larger study. The Delaware Division of Social Services contracted with our group, provided funding for us to evaluate the SCHIP program generally. And this study was based on two specific questions in this survey. It was a simple random survey, a mail survey to parents, guardians, caregivers. We offered an incentive of 1 month free premiums. You can see the sample size there, and given the sample size and the sampling error, we determined these to be representative samples of the population. Okay, back to this concept of willingness to pay. Again, my understanding, I'm a little embarrassed about the economists here, but willingness to pay is part of a larger sort of economic methodology called contingent valuation. And again, I'm going to read this so I make sure I get it right. This comes from a book by Fugit and Wilcox, 1999, on cost-benefit analysis. They say the contingent valuation method is generally used to put a value on a particular resource, good or service, that often does not have a market. So for instance, it's often been used for such things as trying to identify the value that the public places on something like water quality or reducing pollution. National parks, right. And it's generally a survey is used to ask individuals to imagine that a market exists, and then based on this hypothetical market to state their valuation of the associated benefits and costs. Willingness to pay is the most commonly used contingent valuation question, although it's not the only one. Willingness to pay has been used in health services research before, but to our knowledge, it's not been used in this context, and we're sort of excited about application here. There are a few different ways to design contingent valuation questions, a lot of different technical considerations with the way you ask questions, and I'm not going to go into that right now so we can get to the results. But I will say that our findings are based on two questions asked in sequence at the end of the survey. The first question sort of provides a scenario to provide some context for people to place a value on the program. And then the second question actually asks about their willingness to pay. I'm not going to go through the questions right now, not the first question. Second question, I do want to point out, we asked folks what was the amount of the premium that you would find that you cannot afford so that you would have to drop out of the program. And then we provided this range of responses. This is called a checklist or ladder format. Asked folks to circle at what level they could not afford to stay in the program. And you'll see in the findings, we actually had people answer above $50. So for the follow-up survey, the range went up to $100. We also had people, you know, identify numbers kind of in between those $5 increments. And we had some folks identify premium levels below what they currently pay. And we referred to these as protest votes. And we dropped those out of the regression analysis. So our overall findings, parents highly value the program. 92% on the baseline and the follow-up rated the program on a scale of 1 to 10, a 9 or a 10. And in terms of the second question on the willingness to pay, we found that a majority of respondents is willing to pay higher amounts than they currently pay. However, at the same time, we found that many families would be expected to disenroll if we raised premiums. And as we would expect from an economic perspective, income was an important predictor of willingness to pay. This is the good stuff, and I know this is sort of a busy chart here. It's not very complicated when I can try to explain it to you. But the column A is just the responses, what the premium levels were. Column D is the number of people that responded that they would have to disenroll at that level. Column E is the percent that responded. And then column F is what I think is the interesting column here, is the cumulative percent. And it's broken up by the different income categories. But what I've done for discussion purposes is highlight the level at which I've highlighted what a $10 premium increase would look like. So for instance, if you'd look just at the first income category, families in that income category currently paying $10. If we increase the premium to $20, we would anticipate that approximately 26% of families would have to disenroll if we increase the premium. Similarly, for the middle income group, almost 35% would disenroll if we increase the premium by $10. And almost half of families in the higher income group would likely disenroll at that increased premium. This is another way to look at the same data. This is, we call this sort of a demand curve. It's a different way to look at a demand curve, I think. But what we've done, we've extrapolated the data from the survey to the full population of families in Delaware, SCHIP. There are approximately 3,600 families. The three lines on the far right are the different income categories. And this dark blue line closest to me is the aggregate line, and I'm going to show you how we use this. Hypothetically, a $30 premium. What this shows, this is just the aggregate line, again, taken from the previous slide. But what this shows is that at $30, approximately 2,400 families are getting a benefit. That's consumer surplus above the price that is charged below the price that they're willing to pay. It's one way to look at it. Another way to look at it is that from 2,400 to 3,600, approximately 1,200 families would likely disenroll at this level. So clearly there's a trade-off here. This is the same analysis applied to the follow-up survey. You'll see, as I mentioned, we went up to $100. And then this is just the aggregate of the baseline and the follow-up. Whoops, I'm sorry. And what I just wanted to share here is the similarity between the two lines. Parents consistently valued the program at baseline and at follow-up. The slopes are the same. The other thing I did here, Delaware is obviously a small state, only 3,600 families enrolled at the time of the survey. Losing 1,200 families may not sound like a lot, but if you think about this in terms of percentages, and you, again, look at that $30 premium, if I had a horizontal line there, you'd see that approximately a third of participants would likely disenroll at that level. So if you think about that for a larger state, may have more implications. And then these are the results from our regression analysis. We use OLS regression to consider economic and demographic factors that would be associated with parents' willingness to pay. Kent County, that's a geographic variable. Obviously, there's something going on with location. Months in the program, the longer families were in the program, the more they were willing to pay for premiums, and that probably gets at value and utilization of services. And then education and income level of parents was positively related to willingness to pay. So in conclusion, we believe that the willingness to pay approach is a tool that can be used to anticipate the trade-off between increasing premiums and disenrollment. We know from the literature that this is a trade-off. As you increase premiums, more families lose coverage. And we believe that this approach will allow policymakers to anticipate those changes and make potentially a more informed decision with more information. What we also believe is that this will allow, potentially could allow policymakers to develop a premium structure that more closely reflects the characteristics of the population. And what I mean here, and I believe it's in California where, unlike Delaware, which only has three premium levels, I believe California is much more sensitive to income. So as every 10 or 20% increase in income, it's another $2 or $5 of in the premium cost. And then I believe California also varies premiums by county. And I'm not sure what the rationale was behind this, but it actually makes sense given our findings. And I think that there's certainly a lot of potential in terms of trying to set premiums that are more sensitive to either income or other family characteristics so that as we have to make changes and balance that trade-off, we might be able to keep more kids enrolled. The question of value I mentioned, I think there's something we need to explore utilization, perhaps the health status of the child in terms of how much parents value the program. And for future research, the first thing we're really interested in is looking at how this approach can be, how it corresponds with the other research that's out there. So the studies that have looked at disenrollment, how does that compare to what we found? And we just haven't had a chance to do that yet. We also want to just work on our questions a little bit. This was a first attempt, and I think there are ways we can refine our questions to get them more sensitive and get some greater specificity around the regression model. In particular, we looked at income categories instead of exact income levels, and there are more variables that we're interested in looking at. So that was a whirlwind. Thank you very much, and if anyone's interested in more information, I'm happy to talk to you afterwards.